Okay, we're going to bring Senate Finance to order. Today is Friday, April 12th. The time is 9:20. And with us thus far is Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Fairclough. So, and myself, Co-Chair Meyer. So we have a quorum to conduct business. This morning, I'd like to continue our discussion on House Bill 129, Oil and Gas Exploration Development Areas, and then take up House Bill 50, Multi-Unit Housing. That's a new bill. We haven't heard that one yet. And the House Bill 76, we actually don't have yet, so we will not be taking up 76, at least not this morning. And this afternoon, we'll continue discussion on Senate Bill 90, School District Employee Health Insurance, as well as take up House Bill 23 and SB 18, which is the Kinnick Arm Bridge, and then possibly 76 this afternoon as well. So with that, if there's nothing to come before the committee, we'll get started on House Bill 129. This is the third hearing on this bill. Senator Hoffman had requested a legal memo, which I think everybody has in their file. We just received that from Legal, and we weren't sure we were going to get it in time, so we also asked Department of Law to comment, and they did that as well. So you should have both in your file. And I would like to ask somebody from DNR, if they would join the table. Mr. Balash, I see you're here. And Mr. Balash, if you could, did your department get an opportunity? And it does look like we have Becky Cruz, Department of Law, on the line. Wendy Wolf. And it looks like we have one person who wanted to testify, but I think we closed public testimony on this. So we're not going to take public testimony. I apologize to Carl Wasilla. Wassel. Okay. All right. So, Mr. Balash, if you could put yourself on record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joe Balash, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to come back before the committee on this point. I did get a chance to review Mr. Bullock's memo, and in regard to his suggestion that the language in Section 1 regarding the findings it may be unnecessary, I did want to just take an opportunity to address that particular note and provide some additional context for the member if that's all right.
Yes, please go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, the legislation before you and the substantive portion of it in Section 2 is what we introduced quite a few weeks ago. We thought was going to be a useful tool for us as we implement the department's obligations to review and approve the additional steps of exploration and development after the leasing stage. And then, of course, the Red Oil decision itself came out and raised a couple of issues that we thought would be very useful for the legislature to address. And doing so in this particular vehicle seemed to make some sense. It is very similar to what was done approximately 13 years ago in the aftermath of a similar kind of decision, Kachemak Bay, that had to do with consistency determinations. And I bring this up because what Section 1 in essence does is provide a way for the legislature to tell DNR how to implement the findings of the court in Red Oil. And that's important because we need to address the findings in that particular decision. My understanding is the Department of Law has filed a request for reconsideration with the court, but there's no guarantee that we'll get any further clarification on some of the questions that the conclusions raised. So in light of all that, I think it's also helpful for the committee to understand that in the literally days after the decision, we received an appeal on a plan of operations that cited this particular Supreme Court case. And it's something that I don't want to speak to the particular merits of the claim in the appeal, because I will be the one hearing that appeal and making a decision on its merits, but simply want to call out for the committee that, you know, the Supreme Court decision has certainly opened up some uncertainties that having the legislature speak to and address and give the department some direction on would be very, very helpful and allow us to move forward this year as we undertake the reg writing process.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any language to make Section 2 more clear?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, Section 2 is the substantive portion of the statute in question, and we're satisfied with it. I guess the question I would have is which part of it would need to be clarified.
My question is then, if you don't have any language, you believe that Section 2 is as clear as it can be.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we're satisfied with Section 2.
With that, if you look at the second page, Mr. Chairman and fellow members, it says, if the language in the substantive law is clear, well, first it says, in conclusion, findings in Section 1 may be unnecessary. And you could put a but in there. If the language is substantive law is clear, the findings are unnecessary. So if you believe that they're clear, our legal counsel believes the findings are unnecessary, not may be unnecessary. Thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman, and through the chair, Senator Hoffman, let me maybe try to explain a little bit further on that. Section 2 stands on its own and is not driven by the decision from the Supreme Court on red oil. Section 1 is addressing red oil, but Section 2 is something that we were seeking prior to the decision. And so I certainly understand the convention where you would have a finding section to explain what you're doing in the substantive section if they were linked, but they are not. What we are hoping to do is utilize this particular legislative vehicle as a way to have the legislature speak to the way in which the red oil decision will be implemented by the department.
Follow-up, Senator Hoffman?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, the department is going to follow the intent and be backed up by their legal counsel, which is the Attorney General's office. Our legal counsel is Ledge Legal. And when you look at that, I would have to rely upon our legal counsel unless we have a different opinion. And you look at the second paragraph, the last sentence, it says that I suggest omitting the findings from the bill under the guidance of manual of the legislative draft, and then it goes on and talks about the findings on page 14 and 15. And then as I questioned the deputy commissioner, I asked if it was clear, and he had said that it was. So my first preference, I guess, would be eliminate the findings. My second option would be, if the committee is not interested in omitting the findings, that we look at the amendment that was presented yesterday as the second option.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, I don't know if we – did you have an amendment yesterday?
There is an amendment that I have here. If we can have a brief of these.
Sure. All right, we're back. Okay, so Mr. Balash, you know, some of these legal opinions that we've gotten, we just got, so we really haven't had too much time to digest them and understand them. We did have one, though, from Department of Law, and I think they're online. Do you want to? I think it'd probably be best to have them comment on it, or did you want to?
Mr. Chairman, I would agree. It would be helpful.
Okay. Becky Cruz, are you online?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Let's see, you wrote a briefing as well as our alleged legal. Do you want to comment on what you wrote or someone in your group wrote?
Yeah, Do you have a question for us?
Senator Fairclough has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Cruz, we have two competing legal opinions, and we are trying to determine whether we should include legislative intent in the bill that's before us. And so we are wondering if you could speak to why the administration is recommending legislative intent. I would refer the committee to page one of Mr. Bullock's comments, where he says, after he's looking at the manual, after it says the manual of legislative drafting addresses legislative findings at pages 14 through 15. And you read down into that paragraph and it says, this may be particularly true. You might want to include legislative findings. If the bill proposed to enact law is likely to be challenged on constitutional grounds, and I think that is the entire purpose of why the administration is proposing these particular findings, is because it has been challenged constitutionally as an interpretation, I believe it's of Article 8 of the Constitution. And inside of the law, we're debating whether the cumulative impacts are appropriately interpreted in the bill in front of us in the legislative findings.
Okay, I'm sorry. What is the question?
Go ahead, Senator Perkins.
The legislative findings in the bill in front of us, the findings are being challenged as to our interpretation of what the cumulative effects that are listed in the findings are. And so Senator Hoffman is proposing, I believe, or at least for us to consider, removing some of those legislative findings, if not all of them.
Mr. Chairman, and to comment, in the letter from Bullock, the last paragraph says, the second sentence, if the language in the substantive law is clear, the findings are unnecessary. And I guess the question that I ask, are the substantive law clear enough from your viewpoint? And I asked that of the Deputy Commissioner as well, and I asked him for getting language to make that more clear. And he said he did not have any language, which I assume that is clear enough in his eyes. So if it is clear enough, then our legal counsel is saying that the findings are unnecessary.
Okay.
I'm sorry, is your question whether the court's decision is clear?
No.
Yeah, well, I think what we're saying, two things here. We're saying that that we believe it's clear, but the findings just make it more clear. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Mr. Bailiff.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the findings typically in a piece of legislation are connected directly to the substantive law in the later sections of the bill. In this particular case, they are not. The substantive section of the bill stands on its own. It was something we were asking for prior to the court decision. The particular legislative vehicles that we're dealing with here provide a convenient mechanism for the legislature to address how DNR is to implement the court's findings. And so Section 1, as a section of uncodified law, is in many ways distinct from the substantive action being taken in Section 2. And so while ordinarily in the legislative drafting manual you would have findings to go along with the substantive law, this is a little bit different beast in that regard because of the distinction. That the subject is the same, but the findings in Section 1 don't have an awful lot to do other than being on the same topic as the substantive piece of the bill.
Okay. Senator Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the administration is trying to lay out for future court action that we agree with the legislative findings that are there that supports why we're implementing Section 2 in the entire bill, because the court cases that are referred to in Red Oil and in Kachemak Bay, I think when I read the court case, were talking about Alaska's maximum use consistent with the public interest. And so it's my belief that the administration is trying to lay out and get agreement with the or agreement from the legislature that if we have done all of these things, we have laid out why it's in Alaska's best interest to do the other things inside of the section. And so we are speaking in these particular legislative findings, it's my belief, directly to the court to say we are allowing, as you've proposed, if we adopt this, that we allow you to make a single finding of best interest at the beginning, and that you can continue to review that cumulative interest, but you can still make it, and you will still be required to make a best interest finding, but you don't have to go back out to the public, which is what I believe a proposed amendment, at least that we were referring, would circle you back around to do under 3805-945. Do I have that wrong?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, as the legislature, it is the legislature's voice being embodied here in Section 1 as to what it is your purpose is. So I'm not going to quibble with that at all, and certainly we will be undertaking a regulation process associated with Section 2, and those decisions will need to be consistent with the legislature's findings in Section 1. So there is a connection that can be drawn, yes.
And Mr. Chairman, and that is why I asked the department if they had language to make it more clear. You know, so we don't need look at it from a different viewpoint, because in the last paragraph in conclusion, the findings of Section 1 may be unnecessary. And the question is the language substantive law clear? And that's why I asked the Deputy Commissioner, does he have language to make it clear? Because if it is clear enough, the findings are unnecessary from our legal standpoint. But if he has additional language to accomplish what he's trying to do in the findings, we should go there instead. But if the department does not have anything to make that language more clear, you know, I will leave it at that. If you, as the chairman, if you do not want to follow the advice of our legal counsel, and say we can go ahead and include it even though it is unnecessary, I will abide by your decision, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are always two perfectly good ways to look at the same thing and see it differently. What comes to mind is an experiment where a teacher paints a ball that's in front of the classroom, and they divide the classroom, and they stick half the kids on one side, the other, and on one side the ball it's white, and on the other side it's red. And they ask what they see, and they argue why they see it. And so why that's at all relevant here is that Senator Hoffman's absolutely right. If Section 2 can stand on its own, our legal counsel says have it stand on its own and make it clear. But it also says, if you believe that this is going to be in front of the courts, that the courts have seen this numerous times. And we look at Red Oil's case, and we look at Kachemak Bay's case, and we say that the court continues to argue with the legislature's authority to determine what the maximum benefit for the people of Alaska is. And that in a nutshell, that's what's before us. Do we believe that there is a different route that this different than has been at least talked about in the courts? Do we agree with the courts that we have to do this on an incremental basis in phasing, which is in the court case? And the DNR is not saying that we should do that differently. They're just, as I understand it, saying or requesting that they can make a determination once, and they will continue to consider cumulative effect and make those interest findings as the court has asked for, but not go back through the whole process where if you've proceeded towards a development and started a development and are fixing those economics over the life of a project, that you shouldn't be disadvantaged once you start to be able to be litigated at each point along the way. So, again, just back to the classroom analogy, both is right. We just need to determine whether we think there should be findings that might, at some future date in another court case, support our specific intent of what's done here today.
One final comment.
Okay, Senator Hoffman.
I'm done. We've asked for a legal opinion of our legal counsel. The department is supporting their position and have their legal counsel saying one thing. So, in the second paragraph, the last sentence, our legal counsel says, I suggest omitting the findings from the bill under the guidance of the manual of legislative drafting, and they go through that. And then their final paragraph, in conclusion, I find Section 1 may be unnecessary, and you could include the word but if the language is substantively clear, the findings are unnecessary. I asked the department, are they clear? Could they make it clear? They said no. So if I have an attorney on my side, I'm going to listen to them. But if we want to ignore the recommendation of our legal counsel, that's up to us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Brief at ease.
Thanks.
We're going to hold this bill over till this afternoon. I do know that Ledge Council did the briefing fairly quickly. This, as you know, Don Bullock has been pretty busy guy these last couple nights. So we'll give the committee members an opportunity to read the legal analysis a little bit more, and if there's additional questions, hopefully get those answered before we come back this afternoon. Yes, Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, it's a clerk question. Since we're referring to the memorandum that we received, it dated April 12, 2013, from Don Bullock, Legislative Council, is that in the record in a document that's attached to this conversation?
Where'd that come from? Oh.
For the record, I heard yes, and
yeah,
the heads
yes.
Are still nodding. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Bailash. We'll take this up about 1:30 this afternoon, give or take. Okay. So let's go to House Bill 50, multi-unit housing. And see, we do have... Representative Mia Costello is the sponsor. It looks like she has her trusty staff here, Josh Walton. And also we have Stacy's here with Alaska Housing. No, if you don't mind, let's get an introduction of the bill first. So, no, you're good. You're good. You're good, Stacy, bad. So, or not bad, but we'll get you next, Stacy. Okay, Josh, if you could put your name on the record, tell us what House Bill 50 does, and then we'll take questions, and we'll have Stacy come up, and then we'll take any public testimony that there might be. So with that, Mr. Walton, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joshua Walton, and I am staff to Representative Mia Costello, sponsor of the bill. Thank you very much for... taking the time to this morning to hear House Bill 50. What House Bill 50 does, it's been introduced in acknowledgement of a national trend towards multi-use, multi-unit residential housing. This is an area of residential housing that's been growing across the country and becoming more popular as it leads to vibrant neighborhoods where residents have amenities and various commercial space in the multi-unit residential spaces in which they live. These types of properties are very flexible for development, and currently what this bill would do is it would give the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation the ability to participate in leasing and financing and owning properties that have an authorized commercial use space connected to these multi-use properties. This gives AHFC more flexibility. It gives them the ability to participate in the sector of both the residential real estate market and also expands the opportunities for commercial real estate. Along those lines, however, since the mandate for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is housing for residents, we've incorporated a few sideboards in this legislation to make sure that the focus stays on the residential market, since you have the commercial space and the residential space in the same property. Those two markets don't always they work well together in most cases, and there are some areas where they can experience a little friction. And in this case, since we're talking about financing through HFC, it's appropriate that the residential market be given the preference for things that are marketed or that are financed by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And the upshot of that is that there are particular types of businesses that are excluded by way of sideboards, and those would be things that just aren't family-friendly or residence-friendly. These properties, you'd be living above or very close to these particular businesses, and so things like adult entertainment, liquor stores or bars would be prohibited, although not every establishment that is licensed to serve alcohol would be prohibited. As long as it's in the context of a restaurant, that's okay. Substance abuse treatment centers, while everyone is supports substance abuse treatment, that it may not be an area that fits particularly well with residences, particularly low-income residents, or businesses primarily selling tobacco and cigarette products as their primary business. With that, I'm available for any questions the committee may have. That's the overview of the bill.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Is there a need for this? Are you planning, and maybe this is better for Ms. Schubert, are you planning a new development and you want to add businesses or what?
Through the chair, Mr. Chair, my apologies. Ms. Schubert is available to speak about specific projects. From the sponsor's point of view, this does allow them these additional tools, and it gives them a broader scope that they can participate in. But I do believe that they do have particular properties that they're looking at that would fall under this.
Okay. Very good. Additional questions? Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, it's following up on yours. I see that Inlet Towers, it looks like there may be a specific case or an issue there if the HFC is trying to go in and purchase that building for affordable housing. There's a restaurant that's located in the bottom, and the only reason I noticed that is you have a letter of support from that particular homeowners association that's in close proximity to that. So is there a project that's happening with Alaska Housing Finance that's over at Inlet View Towers that's trying to accommodate a restaurant in the lower portion of the building?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I believe that's correct. And for specifics of that, that's another question that I think Ms. Schubert would be able to answer, or some of her associates at AHSC, who I believe are available online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Seeing no additional questions, thank you, Josh. Why don't we have Ms. Schubert join us at this point in time? And if you could, Ms. Schubert, please put your name on the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stacey Schubert, and I'm the Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Great. Well, Ms. Schubert, did you want to add anything to the testimony? So feel free to do that, and then also if you address any of the questions you heard.
Absolutely. I do have a few comments. This bill is very important to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. It is the one piece of legislation that we really felt was important this year for our organization. As an independent state agency, we have worked with the private sector to lead the way in quality construction, including energy efficiency, and to provide home mortgage loans to qualified Alaskans. This particular bill allows us to proceed with commercial space, which, as you heard, does fill a national trend. There's also an interest in the state for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to finance projects such as this. There is a particular thrift store here in Juneau that would augment affordable housing. Also in Ketchikan, there is a senior facility who has approached us about refinancing. And in Anchorage, there are two properties that we're aware of. To respond through the chair to Senator Faircloth's question about the inlet towers, Alaska Housing has already financed that project. And there is a restaurant that is operating downstairs with apartments, market rate apartments above. Currently, there is actually some question about whether that particular property is operating within terms of the loan agreement, and it's something that we are investigating currently based on the financing documents. There continues to be interest throughout the state in this kind of commercial space and housing combined, and we would appreciate your support of the bill.
Very good. Senator Dunley.
Through the chair, we heard this through Labor and Commerce as well. So in the future, you could have potentially, if this bill is passed, different models. For example, you may have a project you want to put up for elderly folks, and in the lower levels, there may be health care facilities for them and other facilities that would help elders at that stage of the game. Also, conversely, I guess speaking, you may have a project that has a lot of young families, and there may be a daycare concept below, or et cetera. So this would allow you to do that?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct.
Okay, very good. Just can't have Choku Charlies or anything like that. So I'm assuming this is something Senator Faircloth and I were working on when we were on the assembly, and I'm still not sure they've got Title 21 done yet, but I'm assuming this is all in compliance with the proposed Title 21.
Mr. Chairman, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation works very closely with local communities and jurisdictions on land use issues, and we would not get in the way of that.
Okay, very good. Senator Faircloth and then Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if we have anyone from the Alcohol Beverage Control Board online.
No.
I'll ask Ms. Schubert if I might.
Yes, please do.
Is there any issue with proximity of alcohol being sold as far as the federal loan guarantee here? I know in the municipality, under those city ordinances, have a specific distance between someone who sells alcohol and either an education facility or a church, and so I'm wondering, that's all in compliant. Where did this language come from? Is it standard or in compliant with other loans?
Through the chairman to Senator Faircloth, the language is something that Representative Costello's office worked on, so perhaps Josh can respond directly to that. However, our intent with this bill really is to work with the developers and have them come forward with projects and request financing from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. As a result, each project will be evaluated based on its merits. And so should there be any concerns with that, I expect through our finance committee and our loan committee, we would identify those and the loan would or would not proceed based on any restrictions with federal funds or anything else. If you'd like, we have expert from Alaska Housing. Mark Romick is our director of planning, and he's on the line, I believe, as well as Eric Havelock, who's our multifamily lender, and might be able to respond with some previous experience that they have.
Yeah, we do have several people online with Alaska Finance Housing Corporation. Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the sponsor statement, we're talking about making housing more affordable and addressing the housing shortage, but in the statement there was some discussion about refinancing here in Juneau. What are the interest rates that we have under this legislation compared to something that we're like Juneau would be refinancing? What rates are they looking at? It seems as though if we're doing that, we're not addressing the housing shortage. What we're doing is decreasing the financial burden of housing projects that exist throughout the state. And I'm wondering what the different interest rates are and why are we allowing refinancing when none of that is stated in the sponsor statement.
Through the chairman, Senator Hoffman, the interest rates for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation on multifamily projects are established weekly, and the taxable loan amount over $1 million this week is 6.375%. The advantage to a developer who might want to refinance with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation or would pursue a project that include both commercial space and affordable housing is that no longer will the projects have to pencil independently. So, for example, the Juneau project with the thrift store, revenues from that store could help out on the financing of the housing in that project. Therefore, presumably allowing for greater amenities for the tenants themselves, or in the case of a new project, for new construction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Do you like this bill, Senator Hoffman?
I can get much cheaper rates than that.
Okay. Additional comments? Questions? Okay. Let's go to public testimony. Is there anyone? Okay. No public testimony, so we'll close public testimony. I do see several letters here of support. Looks like you got good bipartisan support as far as your co-sponsors go. I was looking at that. Is there any additional questions from the committee members? Okay. Senator Dunley.
It's another tool in the toolbox, and in certain parts of the state where land itself is very expensive, this may be an opportunity to have multiple use in a single building and possibly reduce costs for the developer, the tenants, et cetera, so anyway.
Very good. Yeah, you heard this, you said it in Labor and Commerce? All right, it does have a zero fiscal note. See no reason to hold it. Senator Faircliff, if you could, please. Unless, did you want some more time?
Mr. Chairman, I move from committee the CS for House Bill number 50, Finance 28-LS0155/O, with attached zero fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing, hearing none, bill moves from committee. That will conclude our business. Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
And that will conclude our business for this morning. We do hope to get back this afternoon whenever we get off the floor. Still hoping for 1:30. I would assume we'll have a day like yesterday. We'll come back about 1:30, do committee work a couple hours, conference committee 4 o'clock, then go back on the floor probably about 5 o'clock. Okay, with that, we're adjourned till 1:30.